You're listening live to the fourth official episode of the Armand and Akil show, bringing you interviews with local activists, politicians, and policy experts from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland, or maybe not interviews, as you'll find out today. I'm Armand Rana.
And I'm Akil Krishnan. It's Saturday, the 20th of May, 2023, at 5:11 p.m. We are broadcasting live from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkpinam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hey, Akil, how was your week? You went to Victoria? How was that like?
Yeah, I was on Vancouver Island since Wednesday through Friday. It was a good trip. Got a lot of work done, some 10, 12-hour days. Spent some time in Victoria a couple days, then drove up to Nanaimo. Got to see some of the Canadian boonies. That was nice.
Is that a very nice thing to say, calling a place boonies?
I just mean many parts of the island are wild and free, and it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're feeling free.
My friend does live in Nanaimo. It's the reason I went there. She's fantastic.
You just show up to your friend's house and say, "Hey, you live in the boonies. Nice to meet you."
I reserved that commentary for later.
I see. Just for public broadcast.
Just for public consumption in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Okay. Where it would be appreciated.
I see. But yeah, I'm glad.
Well, how was your week?
It was all right. Yeah, working in tech, it's good not being laid off, so that's good. And moved into my own place, which is exciting.
Member of the landed gentry, how does that feel?
Feels good so far. We'll see how long it lasts. It's been pretty good.
Would you say it has been kind of the showtime of your life?
Yeah, no, I don't think it is anything. This is the showtime when we're broadcasting on air, for sure. And I think it's quite dramatic, is that.
So for those of you listening, the show today is formatted differently. As our listeners know, usually we have a guest on the show, but today Armand and I will be taking a look at news stories and social media trends from the past month. We'll play some random clips pertaining to these stories. We haven't heard all of them before, so some of them Armand has listened to, some of them I've listened to, and the other hasn't heard. And we're just going to freestyle our thoughts. And, you know, if you're listening to this, if you have audio clips that you think we should air, send them our way. And with that out of the way, let's get started. So what do we have first on the docket, Armand?
Yeah, so we have, just to set the groundwork, and for people maybe who aren't listening to in Canada, because we have some listeners in India, there's a lot of questions in Canadian politics these days. You know, is Justin Trudeau going to run again? And he's the prime minister, of course. And the leader of the opposition is from the Conservative Party, is a gentleman named Pierre Poilievre, who's kind of a more populist Conservative Party leader than what we've seen in the past. And he dropped this ad the other day about, you know, his engagement with Punjabi culture and the Sikh community. And yeah, I think it's a great listen. So
all right, let's hear it.
If I can get this to play. And the title of the... let me just pause it. The title is called Springtime is in the Air. Sorry, let me start that from the top. And I just describe it. It's, you know, Pierre Poilievre, dressed in, with the traditional head covering, when you...
It's not a pagri, but it is like a headscarf.
Like Khalsa means to be free, to be pure, to be true. He got rid of the caste system among Sikhs, believing that we shouldn't concentrate the power in a small number of hands, but that everyone should eat from the same bowl, that everyone would be called Singh. That means that everyone is a lion. Let's bring a direct flight to Amritsar. It's crazy that we have a million Punjabis in Canada, but no direct flight. I am going to fight every day for the flight. Singapore, Malaysia, UK, Italy, they all have a direct flight that the Indian government has allowed. Canada needs strong leadership to bring home a flight. You deserve it. It's common sense. The common sense of the common people united for our common home. Your home, my home, our home. Let's bring it home. Olé, Sonias!
At the end it says, bring it home, Pierre Polyev. I think that's the slogan. Akil, what is your raw, reaction to that?
When I see that, I do have some appreciation for a Canadian politician trying to reach out to a minority community, right, and try to champion their causes at the same time. The cut of that ad is very interesting. I understand the flight is a big issue for some people in the community. But the way that it's cut together, where he's talking about the values of the community and then suddenly jumps to, by the way, let's get a direct flight to Amritsar.
Yeah, it sounds very commercial almost in nature. I think what's also very interesting to me is that, one of the main criticisms of, Trudeau and Trudeauism is kind of pandering. That's the conservative criticism of his engagement with minority communities. And I have seen, I've seen a lot of, kind of different political leaders, attending various cultural festivals. But I do see, especially with Pierre Poilievre's brand of politics, where he tries to appear that he's above, those sort of cultural signifiers. His message was not a bad message, but just the messenger, I just find a big disconnect.
He's a curious messenger.
Yeah, for the Mr. Anti-woke,
exactly. Yeah.
Going to those lengths to kind of, embrace another culture. It's an interesting journey he's taking.
I did, of course, I found it funny, his pronunciations of the Punjabi phrases. Those to me were hilarious. But I appreciate the outreach, right? That someone from the Conservative Party going out there.
The thing is, I can't laugh at his pronunciation because my Hindi even is worse. So I can laugh a little bit, but then I'm just laughing at myself. So that's the unfortunate thing. But yeah. What are your thoughts? I was wondering, there's also just a broad discussion. Do you think Trudeau's going to run again?
He is 100%. Yeah. He announced that he's going to run again.
And do you think he's going to win, him or Mr. Direct Flights to Amritsar?
So a few weeks ago at the Liberal Party of Canada's convention, Trudeau almost triumphantly announced that he was going to run again. I suppose he's choosing to be completely oblivious to the polling, would suggest that there's going to be no outright winner of any election if it's called right now, and the Conservatives are likely to continue to keep their popular vote win tallies from last time. So, Trudeau is going to come in second, the polling suggests, and the trend seems to be heading that direction. And it looks like Pierre Poilievre the Conservative Party will get the most seats. Do you agree with that? We know the pitfalls of opinion polls far out from an election. Now, that being said, we could have an election at any point. It would not be in the NDP's interest to withdraw support, but it can happen.
Just for our listeners, right now, the Liberal Party is, in government.
But it is a minority government.
Yeah.
And they are in power with the support of the NDP in what's called a confidence and supply agreement. So the NDP will provide confidence if a no confidence vote were to be brought to the floor. And they will also vote with the Liberals on money bills, but everything else is up for debate. Mm-hmm. So that being said, if the NDP were to withdraw support, there would be a snap election, and that can happen at any time. So if there were a snap election in the next 6 months, What do you think is happening?
Yeah, like from the horse race perspective, I think what's interesting is I'm seeing a lot of people in our generation kind of gravitate to the kind of more populist, economically populist rhetoric coming out of Pierre Poilievre. At the same time, that very same rhetoric is, I think, alienating a lot of older voters who traditionally vote conservative. Just the way, especially the stuff he was saying about, you know, Bitcoin and, you know, firing the federal, what is enough, the Reserve Bank.
Bank of Canada. Yeah.
You know, I think the polling, that's what the polling is suggesting, is that he there's been a shift in the younger voters. So that would shake up also the distribution of seats. It might help the conservatives, you know, in the urban areas where they need to pick up seats in order to be competitive from a seat count perspective, if you take out popular vote. But at the same time, you know, as we know, we're flakes. Younger voters are flakes. You know, they sometimes show up in a big way and change the course in an election, or they sometimes just don't show up. So not as reliable voters. And so,
do you think that the blockchain rhetoric of Pierre Poilievre having said he wants to make Canada the blockchain capital of the world, do you think that's primarily what's kind of drawing younger voters in?
No. I think the housing stuff, like the way he speaks in very real terms about, like, you know, the cost of housing and just affordability issues, not just housing but beyond housing as well, like, and the strong language he uses and the level of anger that he has in his voice, genuine anger, it comes across as authentic in a way that, you know, the more kind of, happy optimism of Justin Trudeau after, you know, 10 years doesn't really ring true anymore, I guess, when, you know, affordability has only gone worse in some ways.
Sunny ways, my fellow Canadians, sunny days.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people are feeling that. That's just my feeling right now. I don't think, you know, most people are feeling that, you know, things are sunny ways with regards to affordability. But yeah, anything more before we come to our next clip of doing?
No, I think that pretty much sums up that clip. Yeah, you're right. He does, you know, that's what populists do, right? They speak in very real terms. They offer solutions that are accessible to everybody in understanding. Everyone can understand them. So it makes it very appealing for people to gravitate towards that. Because if you can understand the message, then it's better than someone giving you a vague policy prescription that you maybe you don't fully grasp, because, you know, you're not a political scientist. Like, neither of us are political scientists. So, Yeah.
So let me cue up the next clip. You know, Alberta's having provincial elections in a couple of days.
On the 29th of May.
Yeah, it's just around the corner. And, you know, they had a debate. So the main candidates are the incumbent Danielle Smith. She's from the United Conservative Party, you know, for the premiership and, you know, of course, you know, to form government. And the opposition, which is NDP, led by Notley.
Rachel
Notley, I forgot her first name. So, yeah, and here is, you know, just a clip of their debate to kind of kick us off. You know, kind of gives you an idea of where the rhetoric is kind of at in Alberta. So let's take a listen.
Against Ottawa. This candidate will not. We have to fight back against Ottawa and make sure that we put a target
Daniel
that's
Smith.
Reasonable, realistic, and achievable. I know you're keen on fighting. You want to fight with Ottawa. You want to fight with the media. You want to fight, frankly, with your former self. It's actually quite exhausting. So you can see.
So, yeah, you can kind of, that was a CBC anchor. But yeah, you know, just for context, there was a, can you give Akhil, maybe give our listeners some sort of background on the Sovereignty Act, I believe it was called, what that adventure was about.
So the Sovereignty Act was legislation introduced by the Danielle Smith government, which basically allowed the province of Alberta to quote, what was it? To
fight.
Yeah, the cabinet to fight to against harmful federal laws, and basically allowed the cabinet of Alberta to pick and choose what laws they wanted to apply to Alberta. In essence, which in effect, yeah, I mean the name of the bill is spot on. It's literally like a
Declaration of Independence.
Basically, it's serenity. They didn't put it on the license plate. They wanted to put it into the law, there was the whole fiasco is very interesting because they introduced this bill and there was a huge uproar about this. And the government, Danielle Smith government, said, oh, we didn't thoroughly read the bill. The opposition is free to amend it, which, you know, is mind-boggling. It's also hilarious because you introduced this bill.
And it wasn't just a random, but it was a main kind of leadership promise of Daniel Smith as a candidate.
Right. And you come in like having championed this and you put this, you table this resolution and, you know, your response to the blowback is, oh, I'm sorry, we didn't quite know all the details of this. Like, your government introduced this.
Yeah.
Like, who wrote the bill?
Yeah, it was bizarre. So it's kind of in that context where, you know, traditionally, you know, Alberta has voted conservative, but, you know, I don't know what the latest polling is in Alberta right now. We can take a quick look. But it's, I think, you know, it's probably pretty neck to neck at the moment, or at least when I last checked. We can pull up those numbers for you in a bit. But yeah, it is interesting. The other interesting thing, which isn't mentioned in this clip, is kind of the, politics of, you know, natural gas and politics of natural resources, right, in Alberta, which is kind of very unique. There was a lot of attempts by, you know, Daniel Smith in the debate where she was trying to connect the Trudeau Liberals to the federal NDP, which is supporting them, and then connect the federal NDP to the provincial NDP.
By extension.
Let's see if that plays out for her, but it's interesting.
Those are always interesting conversations for the political leaders, you know, when they say, oh, look, the federal NDP does it, because these are completely, these are independent entities with sometimes different priorities. Like in that debate, you have Rachel Notley championing a pipeline, which I would never imagine a federal NDP candidate for leadership doing. Like, I don't imagine a Jagmeet Singh saying like, hey, I strongly believe that we need a pipeline for natural gas or oil or whatever it might be. So the priorities are definitely different.
I know it's like the same pipeline that the BC NDP kind of
was fighting. Exactly. Right? Yeah, so it's hard to square square the argument with reality,
but then it begs the question, you know, from a voter's perspective, why do you have this political brand as the NDP when you can't even agree amongst yourselves on the most, you know, important questions?
Yeah, but I think the hooks are different sometimes, right? Like the hook could be social policy, where you broadly agree that on social issues. But when it comes to economic policy, the priorities of different provinces are very different and they're different at different times.
Yeah, maybe we need to switch to kind of more kind of India's style of politics, where each province has its own party. Like, you know.
You have over 1,500 parties in any election.
Good. You have like the – we already have this, I think, what's called the what's it called? Saskatchewan Party or something, right? And now we have the BC United.
Right, yes.
So we can start having these kind of very...
Yes, more like regional parties.
Regional parties.
Yeah. We do only have like 37...
That's how we'll get our sovereignty back.
Am I hearing a hint of British Columbian nationalism in your voice, Armand?
Yeah, that's what we need.
The 338 Canada... is currently projecting that the UCP, the United Conservative Party, will get 46 seats. Basically, it's a, you know, plus or minus 8 to 12.
And how many do you need for majority?
44 seats for majority. And the NDP is projected to get 41, plus or minus, again, about 12. Plus 7 minus 12.
So basically it's the, you know, because there's a favored, but it's still kind of close.
But it, when it's this close, it's effectively neck and neck. Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly neck and neck, but let's say it's yeah. It's not settled by any stretch.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it'd be interesting. Cool.
So did you have any other thoughts from the rest of that debate?
Yeah.
What did you think about the, the tone in the conversation?
Yeah.
I think that's always something that we, as a public, focus on is, you know, exactly who delivered what zinger. I don't think most people tune in for substantive policy discussions as opposed to, like, who delivered the most exciting zinger.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's a good point. Yeah, I think that was a good zinger that, you know, it's tiring to watching you fight. And
It felt like she was almost dismissive, like she was talking to her teenage daughter. Yeah. Like, all this drama is really too exhausting for me to deal with right now.
I wonder how Albertans receive that, like, do they perceive it as, you know, I want somebody who fights the federal government, or are they, like, tired of fighting and they want to just kind of, I don't know, like, if that's necessarily, again, I'm turning into a political thing, but, like, as a zinger, it sounded pretty good, but.
Alberta is similar to other provinces where the urban centers are lean more progressive and the rural areas are more conservative, and probably conservative voters want more fights with the federal government. But that's my opinion from my limited exposure to Alberta politics.
Yeah, it's not like you go to Alberta every couple of months for your job.
Moving on, what do we have next? I believe what we have next is something closer to home.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, it's a clip from Ken Sim from a radio channel, and he was asked, you know, his reaction. It's kind of similar to the clip that we were talking about earlier with Pierre Poilievre, where, you know, he's trying to, it's kind of more the cultural immersion kind of question. He was asked about, you know, his feelings about Asian Heritage Month. And I found his answer quite interesting. So let's
And for those of you who are not from Vancouver, Ken Sim is the mayor of Vancouver.
Yeah, that's good context to add.
Yeah, it's not just some random gentleman.
When he was elected as the city's first Chinese-Canadian mayor this past October. And to help us mark Asian Heritage Month this morning, we are joined by Vancouver's mayor, Ken Sim. Mayor, it is good to see you. Good morning. Thank you so much, and welcome to TMS. First off, can we ask you, what does it mean to you to be Vancouver's first Chinese-Canadian mayor and person of color?
Well, first of all, thank you, and happy, Friday, Junior?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, to be completely honest, I never really thought of it that way when I first became mayor. I just thought, you know, I was just another mayor of the city of Vancouver, and we wanted to do some great work here. But then, you know, a couple of days after the election, people started coming up to me left, right, and center, and I realized how much it actually meant to other people, seeing someone that looked like them with the same lived experiences in a position where they could, you know, had a seat at the table. And, you know, it actually means a lot.
Mm-hmm. Sure does. May, as we mentioned, is Asian Heritage Month in Canada. What do you make a point of doing during this month that helps highlight and celebrate Asian communities?
Well, you know, we actually do it throughout the year. And, you know, when you look at...
Yeah, I don't think he has anything special planned for Asian Heritage Month. But I did...
That's one of those things where when the question is asked, you immediately go into a very strong answer if you have like a... You know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, the part I found interesting was more like where he said it means a lot to other people who came up to me and said, you know, it's great that you're the first, you know, Chinese or Asian, and I think, you know, probably the first non-white
Oh, yes.
Mayor
yes.
Of Vancouver, right? So Yeah, what are your thoughts on that, Akil?
You know, as you mentioned, it was a masterstroke of like political commentary almost on like this on his election, where he basically says that he didn't think about it that way, because he says, you know, that's not important. What's important is all my qualifications and my experiences for this. But then he circles back to say, but of course it is important that this happened, and I understood just how important it was through the eyes of the other people that I knew, who came to me and who explained to me just how significant it was to them to see me in this position.
Yeah, yeah. And that what's interesting is that, so he's appealing to two audiences, your Vancouver.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. He's appealing to the typical Vancouver voter who may not necessarily be from an ethnic minority, or who, even if they are from an ethnic minority, don't really, you know, prioritize that in their, you know, voting decisions. And with his first answer, he's like, yeah, I just view myself as a mayor. And then, which is kind of similar to, you know, John Horgan, who's a former premier of British Columbia, who was kind of, you know, he was heavily criticized for saying, I don't see color, you know, a couple of years ago.
Yes, like, famously in that debate, he said, that in British Columbia, I was raised not to see color.
Yeah, which is kind of similar to what he's saying. You know, I just see myself as a mayor. But then he kind of acknowledges other people's feelings and says they're important, which is, interesting way that, you know, kind of as you see more and more, I guess, minority politicians navigate positions of power, like we see, you know, Rishi Sunak is the, you know, the head of Prime Minister of the UK. We see how they navigate their language around inclusivity and kind of contrast it with, you know, Pierre Polyev's
and navigate
deep embrace of Feitstermerzer. as his, you know, kind of cultural outreach. On the flip side, you know, there's probably a lot of genuine criticism that can be leveled against Ken Sim in terms of, you know, what his actual policies are in terms of how they're actually impacting, you know, people of color, in terms of whether it's, you know, increasing spending on policing. You know, he really prioritized that, and even in his campaign and in the rhetoric, and also potentially, you know, the continued gentrification of, you know, Chinatown and those,
of
know,
course,
those kind of areas. So.
And the abolition of like the renter's office, which we discussed with Councillor Christine Boyle of Vancouver City Council, when she was on the show a couple months ago. And that disproportionately
listen to that.
Definitely, that yes.
It's a great interview. go ahead.
Which no doubt disproportionately impacts. You know, if you look at disproportionately impact students, low-income people who are the least likely to own a home in the city and be renters.
Yeah, totally. So that's kind of it for our first segment. We'll be back talking about, you know, more technology and AI kind of stuff in a bit. But before that, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, if you're just tuning in. And we're going to have a short ad break, and we'll be back in a bit. So stay tuned for more.
Welcome. I name Steve Joaquin.
Do Tamsi. Ichuwal. Iswayal.
Ahlo Sahla.
I'm at Skype.
Bienvenido.
Una ti.
You are invited to volunteer for Swissessism Garden. Get away from the rat race. Get back to the land. Heal. Reconnect with yourself. Touch grass. Find a quiet place among the plants and find a quiet place inside yourself. Check us out on Facebook at Indigenous Garden UBC Farm, or visit the Swissessism Indigenous Garden located at UBC Farm just off of Ross Road.
In the context of Vancouver's opioid crisis, CITR would like to take a moment to share some harm reduction strategies.
Try not to do drugs alone. When going out, let friends know what drugs you're taking and make sure someone has an naloxone kit. If you're able to, get your drugs tested before taking them.
Avoid mixing opioids with alcohol or stimulants. Remember that opioids can include painkillers prescribed by a doctor, and it's possible for any drugs to be contaminated with opioids.
Learn the signs of opioid overdose, which include, but are not limited to, unresponsiveness or unconsciousness, inability to speak, breathing that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, heartbeat that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, skin tone that has turned blue or gray, choking or gurgling sounds.
If you think someone is overdosing, call 911 immediately. Start rescue breathing and administer naloxone if you have it. You cannot get in trouble for being on drugs, so always call 911 in an emergency.
For more information about naloxone kits and training, visit towardtheheart.com.
Thank you and stay safe.
Angelique Wilkie says they explore the spaces between things and how to navigate them. As a Black artist and a woman, she doesn't fit into the definitions imposed by society. That's an important part of her collaboration with the choreographer, Melanie Demers. They're both interested in the gray areas. These words offered by Angelique Wilkie, the award-winning dance artist performing in Confession Publique by Montreal-based dance company May Day, on at the Scotiabank Dance Theatre, two nights only, May 26th and 27th at 8 p.m. An autobiographical solo with Wilkie as its muse. The work takes on themes of privacy and secrecy, delving into the marshy depths of the psyche in a revolt against the vulgar self-exposure that bombards us every day. Experience Wilkie's magnetic and powerful performance, shared with humility and unshakable confidence. Tickets are on a sliding scale, $10 to $50, available at plasticorchidfactory.ca.
You know what I could go for right now? Authentic flour tortillas pan-fried until golden brown.
Yum!
Or vegan taco kits filled with traditional Mexican chilies and spices.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Or how about vegan potato and chorizo taquitos?
How can I get these foods immediately?
Buy Lita's Mexican Foods.
Sounds delicious. Tell me more.
Lita's Mexican Foods is a female-managed, plant-based Mexican food innovator in BC. Their products come prepackaged and frozen at tons of local grocery stores around Metro Vancouver. Not to mention they can be cooked in under 10 minutes.
Wow, that sounds perfect for me. I've been so busy lately and dinner takes so long to make. Where can I get my hands on some Lita's Mexican Foods?
Lots of places. Whole Foods, Choices, Stong's, Vegan Supply, Donald's, and even UBC Bookstore. Hey, where are you going?
To buy some Lita's Mexican Foods. See you later.
See ya.
Students of UBC, join us. Join the SSN. A collaboration between the C4 Choral Composition Club and the Music Production Club. With us, you can find someone with whom to collaborate, someone with whom to make music. All skill levels welcome. SSN@gmail.com. Reach out. Together, we can make music. Join us.
Hey everyone, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Armand and Akil show, bringing you local news, sometimes international news, interviews, and the like. Today is kind of a special episode. We're trying to change the format a bit. We're just playing some clips we found that some of us haven't even heard before and just getting our reactions to them about various goings on in our wonderful world. So the next thing we have queued up today is some business about, you know, TikTok bans. You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, banning TikTok in various parts of the world. I know, for example, in our mother country, India, they have banned TikTok. You know, in the United States, you know, government employees, I think in Canada as well, yes, you know, government employees are not supposed to be using TikTok. So
on their work devices.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, even UBC has sent out a recommendation for people not to use TikTok. You know, there's a lot of controversy about this. I think to kick things off, you know, we'll have this kind of clip. Do you want to provide some context about, you know, this Montana clip, Akhil?
Yeah, so this clip basically, it's an interview with Stephen Quest on CNN, and there is a representative from TikTok arguing against this ban. And this is in the context of a group of TikTok creators in Montana suing the state over this ban.
And this is just straight up ban. It's not even for the government employees. It's like nobody can use it.
He joins me now. Well, Eric, I mean, is it your fear this is the floodgates? We know that we've had a variety of bans on works and federal government and state government, but this is the first outright ban.
Richard, thank you for having me here today. I want to first note that there is no other state in the United States that currently has this type of legislation under consideration. This is a radical outlier. The states have been in session for months and will be continuing for another couple of weeks. There is a couple of reasons for it, we think. One of which is it doesn't seem that there's a clear plan on how they would enact or operationalize this piece of legislation. And there's a reason for that, and that's that you can't, there's no playbook for censoring the internet, and that's what Montana seems to be trying to do here.
Okay, but do we have, for example, cases where sport betting is not allowed in one state? So there are cases where states have banned something that is legal in another state, and the technology has had to be adapted accordingly.
The difference here is the Constitution and the First Amendment, and we're seeing quite a lot of civil liberty groups, digital literacy groups, digital liberty groups coming out on both sides of the political spectrum, noting the many, many faults with this legislation, including most notably the ACLU, who point out the First Amendment and the Constitution.
Yes, I think that sets us up. Don't want to play too much of that clip. So, yeah. Do you want to go first? What are your thoughts on, you know, should we be banning TikTok? What's your...
So the person you heard there was Eric Ebenstein, the senior director of public policy at TikTok. And should we be banning TikTok? Let me say what the governor of Montana said when he banned he tweeted.
Yep, yep.
So the governor, Greg Gianforte, for those of you who feel that name rings a bell, he's the one who, when he was a congressional candidate, body slammed a reporter. Just kind of, in case that name rings
a bell. And then denied it.
but it was caught on the
Fox News anchors were eyewitnesses and were like, yeah,
it happened.
It happened, and we've got the audio.
Yeah, so that Greg Gianforte, he tweeted that he banned TikTok to protect Montanans, unquote, personal and private data from the Chinese Communist Party. It's interesting, right? Because them banning TikTok is banning a platform, not necessarily banning speech. So in terms of constitutionality, it might still be allowed to stand. But it'll be very interesting. I'm curious to see what constitutional experts say about this in the U.S. Because it's not like they're banning individual people from posting on TikTok. They're banning TikTok itself as a platform for speech. But I don't know.
But how is it different from like China banning Facebook or something?
Except for the rationale, not really very different.
Yeah, it's
you know, the motivation is different, but the act is the same. It's a ban's a ban, right?
Yeah. I think it's interesting because a lot of, you know, I think one thing about TikTok is that it is a platform for a lot of young leftist content as well, right?
Yes, of course.
And so, I understand where some young leftists feel like it is censoring their speech because, you know, a lot of like Facebook is just full of like a lot of, you know, Pizzagate kind of conspiracy stuff from people who are a million years old. And, you know, it's just a different kind of platform. So, yeah.
And you know, there are also, regardless of your thoughts on whether or not influencers have a real job, that is like people's source of income. And this is going to impact many people, hundreds of people, if not, you know, thousands or more in the state of Montana, whose entire income or the lion's share of their income comes from posting on TikTok. So there are also some not some economic consequences for individuals but through this ban. It'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see what other states kind of follow suit. And I'm really curious to see what the courts have to say about this.
Yeah, yeah. There's also the economic dimension to it where, you know, this is sort of economic protectionism of American social media companies not allowing kind of a Chinese company to compete in that space. You know, we saw with, you know, Huawei and various Chinese technology companies how the moment they started becoming competitive with American products, they were also banned on national security grounds. So there's also the economic, you know, nationalism aspect to it. Yeah.
And you know, the kind of the TikTok's infinite scrolling feature in terms of short video format, and swipe up and go to the next video. YouTube has that now. Instagram
it's
has
it. It's infected everything now.
And it isn't really going to... If anything, the expectation is that people will move. But none of those other platforms do it as well as TikTok does in terms of curating content. So the TikTok secret sauce, the algorithm is the best out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, since we're talking about TikTok, I believe we do have... another clip.
Yeah, yeah. So do you want to tee up our next clip? I know you're excited about this one.
The next clip is about a TikTok challenge in particular.
So what is a TikTok challenge?
A TikTok challenge is, I'd say it's pretty about self-explanatory. It's a challenge on TikTok. I think people famously remember the Tide Pod challenge where people were, teens, were ingesting Tide Pods.
So one teen goes to another teen and goes, hey, eat a Tide Pod.
What
are the mechanics of a challenge?
So say I decide tomorrow that, Dawn dish soap really, really helps wildlife. I love that ad. I love that chick running free at the end of the ad. And I say, you know what? I'm going to drink 10 ml of Dawn dish soap. And I put it on, I drink that, I do it on video, I put it on TikTok, my reaction, everything, and I challenge other people to do it. Yeah. And if it goes viral, you end up having thousands of people doing the same thing. So that's a TikTok challenge. You basically put it up there, the algorithm recommends it to other people, more people like it, more people comment on it, the more people engage with it, more and more people see it, and more people do it. So it takes many forms. I think a more recent one is where people were using USB drives to jack Kia and Hyundai cars that had didn't have engine immobilizers, or people putting buckets on other people's heads in grocery stores. They run up to them
really like random things. Yeah. So what's this one about? The clip we're gonna watch.
So this one, it's called the Kicking Door Challenge, and this is a group of teens in this clip in a town in British Columbia. Kicking down the door, not kicking down the doors, but kicking doors of their neighbors and then running away before they can come to answer the door. I want you to play the clip and we'll describe what we're seeing in this clip. This is very interesting. The way the news has covered this, it's very interesting. Let's listen to it.
Okay, yeah. It's a global news clip that we were going to play. So take a listen.
Think Ding Dong Dash, but for a new generation. The TikTok challenge that involves kicking a front door and running away before the occupants answer plays out over and over again on the social media platform.
TikTok challenge.
But at the same time, terrorizing this quiet Vancouver Island neighborhood.
That's just appalling. It's just ridiculous. Like, what's happening to us?
Think it's wrong?
Many asking not to be identified for...
So the people they're interviewing, they're not... Do you want to... No. They're not showing their faces. They're just showing their lower bodies because the people they're interviewing do not want to be identified.
For fear of retaliation.
By the door knockers.
Fear of being targeted.
It got to the point where it was frightening. You'd be sitting, you know, in the evening watching the news, and all of a sudden it would sound like the whole door was coming in. And so you'd get up to go, and away they'd be running, giggling and laughing at us.
But last Sunday, Owen May, a resident who did not want to speak on camera, decided enough was enough. He says he and his neighbors had repeatedly reported the incidents to police, but when nothing was done, he set up a tripwire with fishing line under his door, telling Global News, "I got a catch of my lifetime the other night. One of them got tangled in a piece of my fishing line I left outside my door." Then he shared this video. It shows May's wife pouncing on the young man. May says an assault ensued. It's important to note that portion of the video was never shared.
It was brutal, though, to see the violence. So it's just sad to see that this is starting to happen here.
There's no reason.
So anyway, the clip goes on.
But it's interesting because there are some people who have shown their faces on this clip, but many people who haven't. And when I first saw this, I was amused by the way this was covered. You know, of course, they're afraid that their doors are going to get kicked next. But it felt like there were whistleblowers or informants.
Yeah.
On some sort of very dangerous organization. They were really afraid of retaliation.
It sounds like a mafia, like a door knocking, exactly. TikTok challenging teen mafia situation. Attacking the, you know, this is a Vancouver Island. It's Courtney.
Courtney Comox. And you know, the people coming out saying, well, as long as you don't use my name, yeah, I'll talk about it. I'll tell you exactly what they did. But for the love of God, please don't publish my name.
Yeah. It's super sketchy. So maybe the answer is, you know, TikTok shouldn't be banned because of leaking data to the CCP, but it's should be banned because it's causing a teen mafia to take over this quiet neighborhood.
Because it's a platform for social contagion.
Yeah. It's just, it's kind of bizarre. I think that brings it. We had a bunch of other clips, that probably brings us to time. So let's, you know, kind of wrap things up. So, yeah. That brings us to an end of today's show. The music you heard at the beginning, and we'll play in a bit, is called Song of the Mies. It was specially composed for us by a close friend of the show, the wonderfully, remarkably, musically talented Sarah Pratt. And you can listen to more of her on SoundCloud at Leisure Noise.
A few other things to wrap up. You can find us at The Irmán Akil on Instagram and Twitter. So please do check us out there.
We do have some, you know, awesome shows with other guests lined up for you. And, you know, do also send us, you know, feedback on the show. And if you have any links or things that topics you'd like us to share, do send them our way. And do continue to listen and subscribe. You can find all of our episodes on our podcast feeds, the Irmán and Akil Show on, you know, iTunes and Stitcher, and including our recent interviews with City Councilor Christine Boyle and the historian Daniel Francis. Do check it out.
Thank you all for listening. Take care and have a great long weekend.